Joseph.
Last week, we introduced 3-2-1. On the front of your bulletin is the 3-2-1 description. And some of you might be thinking, wait a second, Mike, that's exactly the same as last week. Thank you for noticing. Repetition is important. Repetition is important. Repetition is important. I was told by someone that you need to remind people, and he was speaking specifically about the church, you need to remind people every 30 days about something or it will then be forgotten. And so, although we introduced 3-2-1 last week, it will not be the last time you hear about 3-2-1. You'll be hearing about it at least every 30 days. But just for the sake of all of you that just so much want to fill in blanks, here is your chance. Three. Identify three people already in your life that you're in relationship with that are currently not following Jesus. Bless them. Identify three people already in your life that are not following Jesus. Bless them. We got a little typo there. That's all right. Two, identify two people. Identify two people that are following Jesus. Mentor them. And finally, with the one, identify one person that is mentoring you. I'll repeat that whole thing for you. Identify three people already in your life that are not following Jesus. Bless them. Identify two people that are currently following Jesus. Mentor them. Identify one person that is mentoring you. 3-2-1 is not a program. It is a way that we are intentionally trying to courageously live into and out of the Great Commission. The Great Commission where Jesus said, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And then in the first chapter of Acts, we got a little bit of ting going here. In the first chapter of Acts, he says, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. The way that we are trying to live courageously into and out of the Great Commission is 3-2-1. Interestingly enough, the first people to hear those words were the original disciples. These were the individuals that audibly heard those words from the very mouth of Jesus. And what did they do? They actually went out and did it. And the world, the course of human history was changed because they went and did it. Let's be completely honest. You and me, we are not here today if it were not for the fact that the people that originally heard the words of Jesus, they actually went out and did it. As part of their legacy, we're here. On the one hand, those original disciples, what a remarkable collection of individuals. People of great faith and courage, a remarkable group of individuals. But on the other hand, what a completely ordinary group of people. Fishermen, tax collectors, zealots, tradesmen, ordinary people that had courage, that had a faith that sometimes was very strong, other times not as strong. But they actually believed that God was with them. And Jesus said, surely I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. They believed that. And empowered by the Holy Spirit, they went out and did it. And the very course of human history was changed. 2,000 years later, it's our turn. We get to respond to the words of Jesus to go and make disciples. We get to respond to the words of Jesus that we are to be his witnesses in Jerusalem or Rockland, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth. It's our turn. Unfortunately, when we hear that, there's this part of us that becomes just terrified. I can't do that. I don't have all the answers. I have my doubts. It's important for us to be a people that remember a couple of things. Remember the words you just sang in the song. The God that goes with me, he's a friend of mine. He's not going to leave me. He commands an army of angels, and he's for me. Good words to remember. Remember the disciples. Ordinary individuals, bordering on knuckleheads from time to time. And if they could do it, we could do it. The same God that was with them is with us. And the other thing to remember is 3-2-1 is intentionally uncomplicated. And last week at the end of the service, I had people raising their hands. Have you already been participating in 3-2-1? You just didn't have that language. And hand after hand after hand went up. It's important to remember that you can do it because many of you have been doing it. And so this morning, what I'd like to do is I've invited a couple people to come up and share a part of their story with us so that we can see in their example, not that they're to be held on a pedestal, just to go, hey, I can do that. And so Megan, why don't you come on up? We'll start with you. Now, you guys already have been able to have Megan up here once this morning. Megan is our student ministries intern, and numbers are not everything. Numbers are not everything, but I just got to brag on Megan for a moment. Since she started working here in October, the size of our high school gatherings on Sunday nights have doubled. And God is at work in our students, and God is using Megan and her team to do some amazing things. But that's not what we're here to talk about. I just had to brag on you as soon as I could. We talked earlier in the week about, I go, could you identify someone in your life that you would, looking back, was one of your threes? It was somebody that you were already in a relationship with that was, at that time, not following Jesus, and you had the opportunity to just bless them. And you identified someone. Who is that someone that you identified as one of your threes?
My mother.
Oh, wait a second. Okay. That's not the way it's supposed to work. Usually it's, you know, the parent that's reaching out to their child, but in you, it... Okay, how did that work to have your mom as your three?
Yeah. Growing up, it was always like I was the parent and my mom was the child. That's just how it worked when I was growing up, and we were like best friends. There wasn't that mother-daughter relationship that parents should have with their child. And so when I accepted Christ when I was like 15, I recognized that she was not following Christ, and I would try my best, but she... You know, as a parent, you see your child go through all this stuff, and you think they're hypocrites. Like, you're like, oh, you just did this, but you're a Christian. And so I had to try to, like, be on my best behavior with my mother at all times because I couldn't let her see me slip. But that's not possible.
Okay, how were you able to, because when we talk about 3-2-1, our primary role with the people in our lives that are currently not following Jesus is we get to just bless them. Mm-hmm. We can encourage, we can love them, we can show grace in their direction. And if they ask, we're more than willing to share our story with them. How were you able to bless your mom?
I would continually pray for my mom. That's the biggest thing I could do since I couldn't physically like reach out to her. And then I would recognize people that were good influences for my mother, and I would try to connect them and, you know, maybe have them hang out because my mom needed better influences in her life. So once I would tell people, hey, like, you should be friends with my mom, be a good influence. and they would. And my mom has some pretty good friends now.
Okay, how would you describe, so 5 years ago, you would have said your mom didn't have any kind of relationship with Jesus, wasn't following Christ. Yeah. How would you describe your mom today?
My mother has recently started going to church a month ago, and before, like in the beginning of this school year, she would never call me. She would never like tell me that she was proud of me or anything. And ever since she's been going to church for like a couple months now, but she's really like one day after church, a month ago, she texts me and she's like, you know, I'm really feeling this Jesus thing. I think I'm going to give it a shot. And I was like, oh my gosh. And ever since then, she calls me 3 times a week and we actually have conversations, and she texts me all the time saying how much she loves me and how proud she is of me. And like, I've always wanted to hear that from her.
Megan, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. When we talk about threes being somebody that you already know, guess what? Your family can be a three. Now, granted, sometimes the family part is the hardest part because it's so messy with all the relationships. And I love the way you said it. They see everything in you. And so it's really easy to label you as a hypocrite because they see your absolute best and they see your absolute worst. Sometimes it's really hard to have a family member as one of your threes. But as Megan said, what could she do? How can I bless my mom? I'm going to pray for her. I'm going to try to make my life more consistent, and I'm going to try to connect my mom with people that I know are good for her. And in doing so, she blessed her mom. Wow, that's a great example of how to have a three. I need Hal and Jan to come on up here. Hal and Jan have become some of my favorite people for a lot of reasons. One being, since I moved here in November, I've lived half of my time with the Larsons and half of my time with the Coltons in the back over there. And so I am very, very appreciative of them. Now,
he's a little noisy.
Yeah.
And he eats a lot.
I'm glad the microphone wasn't up for that. Okay. I'm going to start with you, Hal. How long have you lived in the house that you're currently living in?
Actually, living in that house about 7.5 months.
That's it?
Yep.
Okay.
We owned it for a year, but we didn't live in it for that full year. And it was just that 7.5 months, which is the period of time that we actually occupied the house.
Okay, so in 7.5 months, you've got a couple of neighbors. And how would you describe your guys' relationship with your neighbors?
Well, we've been sort of excited about the fact that we've established, I think, some real rapport and some real trust that we've been working on as neighbors. Not to target them for Jesus per se, but to first of all to love them and to establish this rapport, to establish this trust. And it's really been sort of neat. They've invited us, we've invited them to our homes. One of the fun things was 2 weeks ago at the National College Football Championship game, our neighbor across the street to whom we're establishing this relationship is a Ohio State Buckeyes fanatic.
Yeah, he's got a huge, you know,
his one room is a Buckeyes museum.
Yeah.
And so we thought we should invite them over. We have something in common. We love sports. He's a fanatic. We're Big Ten fans and so on. So we invited them over along with the neighbors next door, who we have also have this now close relationship. And he said, I don't think I can come. I said, why? He says, I get loud during a game. I said, you've picked the right house to come to. Come on over. So he came over with his Buckeyes sweats, his Buckeyes t-shirt, and we watched the game with these two sets of neighbors, if you will. But we've tried to, little by little, love them, show them our interest in them, and they have responded. And we're so grateful for that.
Okay, now I got to point this out. You're now permanently living in California. What state were you living in?
The great state of Michigan.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Ohio State and Michigan are sworn enemies.
Yes.
Now, when Oregon played Ohio State and your Ohio State neighbor was at the house.
We believe in conversion. We were Buckeyes fans.
So this might be completely heretical, but when we talk about 3-2-1, and we talk about identifying people in our lives that are currently not following Jesus, and our job is just to bless them, could you say that rooting for the Buckeyes was an intentional act of blessing?
It was very intentional. And I guess the neat thing is that we're looking for things that we have in common with our neighbors. And that was one example for us, an opportunity for us to establish that rapport and that relationship.
Now, how about you, Jan? What are some ways that you've been able to maybe be intentional in your blessing and caring for and loving your neighbors?
Going back to the Ohio State game, during that period of time, Lori was able to share with me that her... He knows I can't talk in front of people.
Just talk to me.
Okay. that her daughter was going through a divorce. I'm hoping that I can somehow connect with her through that divorce. I made some lemon curd, so we're going over with lemon curd today. I don't know. That's kind of sour, but I'll try.
I appreciate that. Now, how we were talking about this the other day, do you ever feel like your relationship with your neighbors, in your relationship with your neighbors, you could be accused of having ulterior motives, that you're not being authentic in just caring for them because you've got this ulterior motive, it's a bait and switch kind of scenario. Could you be accused of that?
Well, I suppose we could, but in our heart, at least, we are trying to simply love them as followers of Jesus. Our prayer is that they will see in our lives a lifestyle that is Christ-centered. And so we talk about our life with them and what we're doing. We have not sat down with them yet and said, do you know Jesus personally? But we trust that we're opening doors in their hearts as we share with them by our lifestyle. They're watching us. That's the scary part, as Megan said. We're being watched. And yet we realize that.
Doors open oftentimes.
Yeah. But nevertheless, we just feel that they're responding to us because they're suggesting that we do things together now.
That's fantastic. Thank you so very much for sharing. Thank you, Jan. All right, I'm going to need Lee to come up here because Lee and I had a really interesting conversation the other day. And ever since we had that conversation, Lee, I thought, oh, my goodness, we need to share this conversation that we had. Now, we were talking about 3-2-1. This must have been, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, something like that. And as we were talking about 3-2-1, you made a comment to me that just caught my attention. Because you said that before you retired, you'd be able to identify many people that you were in relationship with that were not following Jesus, but that you could be intentional with. But then you noted that since you've retired, you seem to be increasingly just surrounded by other Christians. Go ahead. Can you explain kind of that reality in your life for us?
Well, being in education, I was in touch with a lot of many thousands, I'm sure, over the years of my career. And as he's noted here, when I retired, I all of a sudden discovered that my friendships were completely with Christian friends. Now, I enjoy my Christian friends, but it was so much of my life was around them. And I started to be concerned about that. I was no longer having that outside contact as much as I'd had when I was in education. And I was taking a look at what am I going to do about that?
Okay, so now we've introduced this idea of 3-2-1 and identifying people that are in our lives. But you've noted that you just don't have that stable of people so much as you once did. So what have you done to maybe change the people that you're in relationship with so that you can then be a blessing to people that are currently not following Jesus?
When Shirley and I went up to spend Christmas with our daughter and family in Washington, we stopped in Oregon. On the second day, we had lunch with a man and his wife that we have known ever since I was in junior high. Up in Eureka, he was the best friend of my brother, but we have established a relationship through the years with Dave and Leah, but we're in different worlds. as he has commented on emails as we have exchanged over the time, we have a different worldview. He grew up in my church. My dad was his pastor, and he declared a strong faith in Christ during his time in high school. But then when he went off, he went on to become a college professor. He got a PhD in physics and was a physics teacher in college for most of his career. And he came to the conclusion that there was no God. And he expressed this. And as he has commented, that we have a different world view. Well, we had a chance to have lunch for 5 hours in their house on our way up to Washington. And it was just a great, they're very compassionate people, but we're in different worlds. And we recognize that, but we just were able to have a lot of conversation together in spite of his high education beyond me. Sharing our reminiscing of our time back in Eureka, our careers in education, and it's going to continue. We're going to continue to have contact with him. One other event since then, too, is that we have recently moved into our house just a few months ago, as soon as we could get the Larsons kicked out of the house so we could move in, and had just brief contact with our neighbor next door. Well, lo and behold, when we had that big windstorm in December, the fence blew down between our lots. And so Dennis and I had to spend some time arranging to get that fence put up. And so this week, we went out and celebrated together over coffee. We had our fence put up. And so that was a big celebration for us. And so we took a 2-hour coffee break in our busy retirement schedule. And it's just, and so we've opened up some doors there that will continue.
That is fantastic in its simplicity. Although I can't help but notice that in your desire to build relationship with your neighbor, you put up a wall. But
I look at it that God blew down the fence so I could get acquainted with him.
I like yours better. So, you guys, Lee, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. We had these folks share because it could be neighbors. It could be people that you've known forever. It can be a family member. It could be a classmate. It could be somebody that you're working with. And our job is we get to just bless them. We get to encourage them. But it requires intentionality on our part to actually go grab coffee with that person, to stop in to have lunch with that person, to pray for that person. I love the fact that the first words out of Megan's mouth on how to be blessing her three was to pray. And so we're going to do that. We're going to pause. And what we're about to do is going to be a little outside the box for some of you. Those of you that are getting to know me are beginning to learn that I live outside the box. It's where I reside. But what we're going to do is we're going to take some time to pray, but we're going to pray differently than maybe you've ever prayed before. You couldn't help but notice when you came in this morning that this back corner is different. It has been set up as a place to be praying specifically for our relationship with our threes. For the last couple weeks, we've been talking about who are those people in your life? Who are those people in your life? And we trust that God has been putting names and faces on your heart and your mind. And so in a moment, I'm going to have the band come up. So band, why don't you guys come on up? And they're going to be playing three different songs. There's going to be a reading in the midst of it. But during that time, we're going to encourage you to get up and make your way over to the prayer area. There are three different things we're going to ask you to do over there. One, on the wall with the windows, and we intentionally chose that wall because that has the windows that look out. Our threes aren't here. They're out there. And so we chose the wall with the windows. Go over there. There are Sharpies for you. And what we're going to ask you to do is write down the name or names of your threes. If you feel uncomfortable putting their name up there, for starters, just put a first name. And if you're still uncomfortable with that, put an initial up there. And when you write that name, take a moment and pray for them. Pray for yourself that you'll be a person that is able to intentionally bless that person. On the back wall here, in that prayer space, is a huge map of our community. What we ask you to do is there are pins with little stars. Put a star where you live. In addition, there's other landmarks there. If you want to include another landmark, maybe there's a place of business. I think we've gotten most of the schools on there. Put that there. And what we're going to end up seeing is the physical reality of the influence we can have in our community. Because it's going to be filled with you. Pray for your community. The other thing that we're going to ask is that when you are back there this morning, that you do that in silence between you and the Lord. Because the rest of us are going to be in here, we're going to be singing, and we're going to be just soaking in the reality of who God is and what he's done. But we're going to encourage you to get over there. In addition, we're leaving that space open. There's a schedule on the back wall because we would love for you. Next week, come early to church. Today, stay late. Go in there and pray. During the week, come in and pray. Pray for the people by name and pray for the person that wrote their name there. I am so blessed by the fact that this church is a church that prays. And we want to be as intentional about praying for the people that aren't here as we are about praying for the people that are. And so for the next 10 minutes, we're going to pray. We're going to sing, we're going to write, we're going to pray. Let's go. One of the primary causes of death among teenagers in our country is suicide. In the state of Washington, the numbers are alarming. In the small community that I was in for the last 16 and a half years, for over a decade, every year there was at least one student at one of the two local high schools that committed suicide. And in most years, there were multiple. For over a decade, imagine in here if every year for over a decade there was a student at either Whitney or Rockland High School that committed suicide. That was the reality in Gig Harbor where we were for the last 16 and a half years. And eventually we said, enough is enough. Enough is enough. And we gathered at the beginning of the school year and we said, enough. And we began to pray. Some were on their knees. It was students. It was adults. Some were on their knees. Some had hands lifted up. Many were in tears as we just prayed to the God that we just sang to and about. We called upon his great name and said, God, something has to change. And we are praying against suicide. We are praying against death. And then going into the year, those students and those adults tried to just be present with their classmates and let them know they are of worth and they're not alone. And after over a decade of every year a kid committed suicide in that small community, that was the first year that there wasn't a kid that committed suicide in those schools. And the following year, there was not a kid who committed suicide at those schools. And the reason I share that story with you is something that you already know. Prayer is important. Praying for those that are lost and hurting is important. I can't stand before you and tell you I completely understand how prayer works. I just know we're supposed to do it, and it does. You wrote names on a wall, and that was beautiful. And you prayed, and we need to continue to pray, because if God can transform Gig Harbor following the prayers of God's people, what can he do here? Identify three people that are already in your life, that are currently not following Jesus. Bless them. Pray for them. But if all we do is reach out to the people that are currently not here, we will be a people that will starve. We need to take care of one another as well, which is why the two and the one cannot be forgotten. Identify two people that are following Jesus that you can mentor, and identify one person that is mentoring you. I love the way Henry Nouwen puts it. He says, we are not the givers of life. We are sinful, broken, vulnerable people who need as much care as anyone we care for. Amen to that. which is why two and one is so important. And I'm going to ask my favorite person in the entire church to come on up here. It's my wife. I am completely unashamed to say that all of you are fighting for second place. Now, other than the fact you're my favorite person, and if you could give us a moment, I'm just, your youth pastor growing up, because this whole idea of two and one is central to who you are, your youth pastor used to say that you need, everyone needs to have a Timothy, and everybody has to have a Paul, someone they're investing into and someone that's investing into them. What are some ways that you have over the years, because you've been doing this as long as I've known you, how have you invested into other people or mentored other people? What are maybe some examples of what that's looked like in your life?
I thought you were asking me about one.
Yeah.
Okay. I think starting in my senior year in high school, I started working with the junior hires in our church, not knowing that that was actually going to be my trajectory in life, kind of focusing on junior hires. They're my favorite people. But I led a small group of kids, and that looked like going to lunch. We didn't grab coffee back then. That wasn't the thing to do. We went and had a Coke. And we would sit and talk about life and the struggles and the little victories that were happening. And I just loved them. And then later on in life, it became my daughters, my two kids. They were my two. And I invested in them. As they got a little older, I had another small group that started in junior high, and now those girls are 29 and 30, the two that I focused on, and we still have an incredibly deep relationship. And that just looked like being intentional and asking them, like the great question you gave us last Sunday.
How's your walk with Christ
today?
Yeah,
how are you and Jesus doing today? What does that look like, you know? And we had enough relationship and trust built that they would be incredibly real with me, sometimes more real than I wanted them to be. So I would practice the game face, you know, like, okay. And inside going, oh, Lord, help me with this one. How do I walk with them through this?
Now, I know that moving down here, one of the things that was incredibly difficult moving down here was you had to leave your one.
I did.
How did you go about finding a mentor, and what did that relationship look like?
I think if I were to go way back, again, to high school, because that's when this was demonstrated in my life, my one was given to me. She was my small group leader, and she actually now lives in Roseville, which is very exciting to me. So I had a one through youth group, and that was great. And so that was just modeled. I thought that's just how you did Christian life. You know,
That's how we're supposed to do Christian life.
Yeah, that's how you're supposed to do it. And then that translated into a couple other people through my life. If you were here last Sunday, you might have seen me fall apart right about here because one of my ones showed up from Ventura, and that was really cool. And living up in Gig Harbor, it took me a long time to find a one. I think a lot of that had to do with where I was in life and being a pastor's wife. Finding a one in the congregation can be a little tricky. And I had just been praying, Lord, I need a one. I need a one. I'm feeling starved. And a name popped into my head. And it was funny because we're at a Christmas party. And I'm talking, no, it was before the Christmas party. I was talking to Mike about it. And I said, you know, I really feel like I should ask Barbara to be my one. And he's like, oh my gosh, I've been thinking the same thing. So at the Christmas party that we went to every year, I cornered my girlfriend Barbara, who is almost 80. This year she'll be 80. And she was a retired counselor. She had done some parish kind of ministry in the past. And she had done work with pastors' wives. I didn't know any of this. And so I approached her and I said, Barbara, you know, would you be willing to be my one? And that was language in our church, so she knew what that was. And she said, absolutely. But I need you to know that I don't want it to be a one-way relationship. I want to be able to meet with you and have you building into my life as well. So we started meeting every other week. I was teaching full-time. So my weeks were crazy and my nights were sacred. So we would meet during the first service at church, and we would talk and catch up about life. We would bring a 3x5 card with us that we had already written, three things that we wanted each other to pray for during the week. And I just glued that onto my head, that little sticky tack stuff that teachers love. And I put it on my dashboard so that every time I was in my car, I could, you know, see those things that were concerns in Barbara's life and pray for her. And it was really good and really rich. And we laughed together. We cried together. I thought it was going to be all about her building into me, but her husband was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So it became very reciprocal and beautiful.
Not every day I can make my wife cry in front of the church, but what are the things about having a one or having a two is showing up. Would you be willing to be my one? And if someone asks you to be their one, don't be intimidated that you don't have all the answers. Sure, I'd love to walk with you. As you think about the twos, who can that be in your life? We need to be a people that care for one another and walk alongside and do life together. We got to get rid of the fine face. You've heard me say this before. What does fine stand for? Freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. So we can get rid of that and just be us. Now, as we close this, I'm sure there are some of you that are thinking, wait a second, we didn't have a sermon today. And I would disagree with you completely. You were the sermon. And you are the sermon. There's a quote on the wall as you walked over there. It's usually attributed to St. Francis of Assisi. Preach the gospel at all times. When necessary, use words. You're the sermon. May we never be a church where I'm the only one that preaches. You're the sermon as much as I am. And may we never be a church that reduces church to a location. I go to church. Ooh, can we please get rid of that language? We are the church. You don't go to church, you be the church. Church is not a place where we simply come to hear theological truth that we already agree with and then go home unchanged and live the same way we were before we got there. No, church is a gas station. You ever think about that? A gas station is never your destination. A gas station helps you get to where you're supposed to be going. Church is a gas station. May this never be our destination. May it be the place that we come and are encouraged and challenged so we can go out and live. Because guess what, folk? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday are as sacred and holy as Sunday is. Three, two, one. May that come to define who we are. And may the preaching of your life this week be loud. Loud and gentle. Would you pray with me, please? And then Paul, come on up.